the only validity that live work has for me is the in terms of art, which is maybe begs the question in relation to art, is that it exists because it attaches itself, or is attached to, or comes up through a notion of art, and therefore as a notion of high culture. Right? And therefore it can only have any real validity within that sort of, within those terms. Now, my own sort of personal activity has been to attempt to from within the position, from within a high cultural position, let's say, I mean, I know it's a cliche, high culture, but we all know what we mean, to try to move to the edge of where maybe high culture and some other kind of cultural activity takes place, right? It's maybe isn't clear, maybe, but there it is. There is an attempt. There's been an attempt, a continual attempt to do that in different ways. Now, I think I've come to the conclusion that that is actually quite abortive, and that the only way that one can actually have any useful social function, as maybe not even as an artist, but maybe someone dealing with, if you like, operating within culture, is in fact to abandon that notion of high culture and actually think in other cultural terms, and start to operate accordingly. In other words, that it's a dead end. You know, it has no real meaning. It has no, within the terms that I'm using it. I'm not saying that there aren't good paintings and all the rest of it, and I don't want to sort of like get into all that. But for me, in the way that I've been using it, maybe, you know, it's quite abortive. It's a possibility. It's more than a possibility. It's a probability. And that my attempt to break out into like, for example, starting off directly in relation to an audience, moving all the way from that, working through with all of these institutions, I've come to that conclusion that if one is actually within the context of high culture, one is caught with a certain in a certain social dimension, and that the only way, if one wishes to actually operate in other terms, one has to abandon it and develop others in some other context. Film is an obvious. Possibility. That may be too simple at the moment to say, and I may not do it, and so on and so forth, but it's there as a big question which comes out of all the things that I've been doing. It does exist in different cultural terms, it seems to me, than I mean, I know that you have such things as art films, and you know, there have been sort of attempts to bring film under the umbrella of the arts, as it were, in a certain way. But I mean, if one really looks at it, its main function and its arena is largely outside of that. It's largely public in an entirely different sense, and it erodes the whole sort of high cultural thing in itself, because it's an available communicative means, which is very powerful, obviously, like video. I mean, a video is even more virulent, I think, potentially, and I think it's equally challenging to the whole high cultural thing, unless those other languages like painting and sculpture, if we're specific to the visual arts, you know, take on another role. You know, I mean, at the moment they're going to the only role they can really take on, it seems to me, is the one of the you know, this activity is made by an individual, not mass produced. You know, it's unique, and therefore has status, precisely because, you know, so much work, labour has gone into it, and it is unique. And those individuals who, you know, wish to what, acquire status of one sort and another, you know, over and above whatever status they have in their profession. This is a way to achieve, this is a way to acquire it, you know. I will have my X or Y, whatever the name of the artist is, you know, we can think of Hockney or whatever. And that function seems to me to be such a banal, pathetic thing. If I've described it in it with any degree of accuracy at all. Whereas it seems to me that contribution that one might make, or individuals might make, in film, video, and so forth, it's wide open. It's also got a lot to do with power, of course. You know who has the equipment, who controls the means by which this stuff can be looked at. Has the power. And this is another problem altogether. But nevertheless, I think that's an area that one can begin to sort of look at, and it may be a form of, may have another form of transmission, you know, which is going to be far more effective than any kind of continued attempt to divert the actual mechanisms which actually hold and contain, you know, like painting and sculpture and all of that, and that high cultural, high class position. That's where I think that's why I think we have such a dynamic confrontations, by implication, not in actuality, going on in the fine art schools between, say, the technology and these other so-called traditional areas. There are four pieces of work that I've done that were sponsored by public institutions, two from this country and two abroad, and it's probably not surprising that the same sort of reasons apply to the two pieces of work that I did. The reasons to why I wanted to do them outside, in relation to British institutions. And they're rather different for the reasons of the two foreign ones, the German and Australian. We've already talked about the Hayward piece and the reasons for it. I think it was about 1978, I was selected to show in an exhibition called A Certain English Art by the British Council. Sponsored by the British Council, organised by the British Council at the Museum of Modern Art in Paris. I think that's it, isn't it? Yeah. And it's just the same problem arose again for me, which is it has sort of several aspects to it. One, the problem of being selected in the first place by public institution like the British Council, which the very fact of choice suggests that one's work, it falls within a certain context, which is an acceptable context for government, let's say, ultimately for government anyway, or for the Foreign Office, or specifically the British Council. That's the first problem. And the second one would be to do with the actual circumstances in which one might be working, in this case a museum. And I have difficulties with conceiving of working in museums. I think I could conceive of doing a work in a museum, but I don't particularly want to. I mean, it seems that, again, that there's a sort of a certain seal of a kind that's sort of set on work when one actually is operating within a museum. And I wanted to stay as away from it as much as possible. So I conceived of a work in Paris which referred back to the work I'd done in Sydney in 1976 and to the work I'd done in Kassel in 1977. Both of which were done outside, and where the problem of weather and
so forth came into account. An active part of the whole process. And this particular show in Paris was taking place in January, so it could have been very cold. And it was very much within my mind this problem of, well, if one is actually, and this is maybe a metaphor in a way, if one is stepping outside of the institution, the museum, which is going to be, physically that is going to be very warm and so forth, into the cold, in more than one way, I guess. The problem of survival was the one that came uppermost. How am I going to be able to stand 3 days and nights in outside in January in Paris? For me, the colder it would have been the better. You know, the more the work would have had it would have been a stronger, more concrete. You know, the intention of the work, because the problem of survival was uppermost in my mind. The British Council had taken photographs of the, or somebody in the British Council had taken photographs of the outside of the building, which was a kind of I don't know when it was built, but it has a sort of 30s look, classical kind of Italianate architecture, which sort of seemed to have affinities with Nazi architecture somehow. Very heavy columns, very tall, and so on. A sort of Gothic kind of influence on a kind of Greek temple, if you see what I mean. And there was a kind of big courtyard with steps going down. But this was the building itself was up from the Seine and overlooked the Seine. But one stepped down, as it were, from the museum to I think it's Avenue President Wilson, and then to the Seine. So that this kind of patio, enormous, large patio, overlook the Seine in that way. And the idea I had was to actually somehow survive on the steps, somehow make something which would fit into the steps, and that I could actually very modestly kind of survive there in some way, live there for 3 days. And this was the intention. And when I got to Paris, it was very cold. It was extremely cold. I think it was 5 degrees below zero or something. And it was absolutely right for the work, but it was quite frightening. It was so cold because it was that kind of cold that one wants to go inside. It's nice to be out for just a short time, and then one wants to go inside. And I thought, well, this is it, but it is a bit overpowering. And unfortunately, the weather just the next day when I was due to start at that evening, the weather had gone completely mild. It was up to sort of like 45 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And so I was a bit disappointed, really, that the weather actually wasn't playing its part in the way that I'd hoped. So I was due to start the work at, I think, at 6 o'clock or something like that, that evening at the opening of the exhibition, which had been arranged, I think it was by Sandy Nairn, I'm not sure. And it was a very difficult, the whole thing was extremely difficult, because in the middle of all of these works, in different mediums, one was somehow expected to, you know, make a performance as such. I found it sort of really quite a daunting prospect. Anyway, what I decided to do was to start inside the museum naked and then walk outside of the museum towards where I had a little triangular type structure. It was about not more than 30 inches high, maybe less, and about 6 feet long, which I'd built, which was like a kind of sleigh or a sledge, and it had ropes attached to it, so I could. It was like I had. The notion of the work was that I could carry my, I could carry my my house with me. I could take it anywhere. Not like a tent, it's much too easy, but like a snail, you know, the house itself would be a kind of burden, or the living structure would be a burden, but it could still be moved. And I wanted, and that it could sort of somehow fit into the steps somehow and become quite anonymous. Well, I didn't really, that's something I didn't achieve. I didn't fit it into the steps, and I saw the steps and found that it wasn't really right to do that. Didn't seem to fit. So I made this other structure, which was just very simple, and in relation to the architectural scale of the environment was absolutely tiny, like a flea on a drum. It's quite a peculiar sort of and very, I would have thought, diminishing of the individual, you know, sort of reductive in some way.
This is something you wore almost like a cladding.
Yes, I was thinking of it like that. So that when the work started with me actually coming down the stairs with a plastic bag with all my clothes in, with nothing on, walking down through the, you know, through and out to the ground floor, and all these people coming in, and I was the only, and I just walked out, as it were. They pretended I didn't exist, I think, you know, like this naked figure just stepping out through the door, out into the darkness and into the sort of relative cold. And then I put my clothes on when I got to this thing which I'd already placed in the middle of the square, and that was it. Then I was there for 3 days and nights, and that was really how it started. There was a certain amount of interest, but very little, basically. I mean, it was just something that had happened, and they were there, all those people were there for an opening, and they went on in and drank their water, wine, or whatever they were doing. And I was in the other, I was going in the other direction. I mean, it was a deliberate move. Yes, yeah, absolutely. So I didn't really expect any support. I mean, it was not the nature of, and the title of the work was, I think, called, again, it was one of those ones, Beneath the Level of Dignity. It was actually to drop below the sort of, actually what it really was to take this work, which was within the within a high cultural context, and actually put it so far out, to try and put it outside that context, but at the same time assert that it was a cultural statement, even if it had rather strong or heavy, not strong necessarily, political overtones. What happened was that first night I immediately bumped into a tramp who was quite aggressive and articulate about the fact that I shouldn't do what I was doing because it would queer his pitch. But he, curiously enough, became the main participant in this work, because gradually we got into conversation, and he became quite supportive, and not necessarily supportive of the idea. I mean, I don't know whether he ever was or wasn't, but quite amenable to me actually sharing the space that he used more or less every night. And there were several others who came at night, and they were the people who drop below the level of dignity, as it to give it the thing its title, I think, or something like that, means actually in some ways to, I mean, there will be human being. It's a metaphor, if you like, for, you know, like another dimension of human living, and there they were. Quite appropriate in a way, and so the work actually, it's quite curious, the work, the context of the work being, you know, the British Council and this British, or rather English title, English Art Now. No, was it? A certain English art. Yeah. For one would assume people who would be going into the museum. They, in going into the museum, didn't see me at all. I was coming out in the other direction, coming out of the museum, at the start of the exhibition to work outside and came into contact with the people who in fact were beneath the level of dignity. The sort of the night people of that area. So we, during the next two nights, you know, we had some conversations. He spoke English very well, and he showed me what his living situation was like, how he organized it, and so on. He told me about his life. I talked to him a little bit about mine. We had general, sort of rather pleasant sort of social chats, and he was the person that I was mostly in contact with. During the day, people would. Some few, depending what I did, I mean, I could draw people's attention to what I was doing, but I didn't really see the point of that. It seemed to me that it was much more the situation itself that was the important issue and not what one was actually doing within that situation. One could actually have done nothing or very little. I did occasionally get frustrated enough to walk about, and if I did, I took my living thing with me, my shelter with me, and went round the space in one way or another. What I would like to think is a kind of sculptural, I mean, a spatial sculptural sense. Also suggesting a kind of nomadic kind of giving it. Suggesting that there was a nomadic aspect to it, you know, that one could take up one's house and go somewhere else. And this was implied in the fact that one was moving this thing. And then at night, putting it in the most sheltered place, so that in fact one wasn't going to be either molested or become a focus of attention. For either the forces of the law, who would then see the other, their attention would be drawn to the other people who were sleeping there, and you know who would have to go on sleeping there, I presume, after I'd left, or you know people who might you know be aggressive in one way or another. So it was in the daytime. It was there as a kind of very low-keyed kind of statement, and at nighttime there in a very modest way. In terms of survival,
that piece, as you've described it, embodies and presents the content in a clear way. In that, here you have something that is both, well, it's certainly outside the official establishment of as it's manifest in the building and the portico and so on. And it has menace because you know it's there when it shouldn't be there, i.e., at night. And then it seems to link in with the people who, for one reason or another, are at the bottom of the pile.
Terms. Yes. This happened in Sydney as well in 1976. We haven't talked about that, have we?
No.
Because Sydney had the same kinds of problems in a different way that I was... I couldn't go to Sydney to see the space, but I wanted to work outside too, and I did. And it was on a road just inside Hyde Park in Sydney. And I had some bits of wood built, some sort of wooden frames built to... I can't exactly remember what the argument for them was. I certainly didn't use them in the way that I'd intended to, but they were about 6 feet tall, and they were sort of just frames, wooden frames. And they provided a basis for a living situation that I created, as it were, established on the road in just inside the park. The problem there was that I was invited by the Sydney Sculpture Biennale to come to take part in that it's an international show, sculptural show with extensions. Conceived in a way that we don't have in Britain. Sculpture seems to stop. There's a line in sculpture which drops, you know, and there's a whole lot of sculptural material people, people interested in sculpture just don't seem to see. You know, that is, they have a very clear notion as to what sculpture should be. You probably know where it's at, what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you mean.
There it is.
Yeah.
Well, it's not true in, in Sydney, or it wasn't true in Sydney. And no doubt a lot of those self-same people who have such rigid notions here would regard the Australians as being somewhat undeveloped.
Here is an irony, I suspect. Yes.
Anyway, the first night was actually just, there were just these bits of frames, and I had some polythene, not much, just a polythene sheet. So I just slept on the polythene sheet in the road. And in the morning, you know, people were coming to work, and they didn't, I don't remember people talking to me the first morning. But I had been interviewed when I arrived by actually a fairly well-known, a very well-known journalist who had sort of, for some reason or other, been interested in sort of doing an article on me. And this, I think, drew attention to me, and there I was in the park. So then the media began to pick it up after two or three days. And by that time, I'd sort of established this a little more. I mean, you know, it's like building a house, really. Made it a little more solid, as it were. It was still totally open. And it was a period of time in Sydney when it was sort of springtime in late November, early December. So I suppose sort of middle spring or late spring. And the weather was pretty, it was variable. It was very hot when the sun came out, and it would rain like mad, and, you know, it was fairly violent, the weather. So I was soaked several times. and people, you know, I would be sitting there maybe one breakfast time, sort of just cleaning my teeth. There was a public toilet not far away, and there was also a thing for drinking water, a water fountain you could drink out of the other side. So I had water and I had a public toilet, right? That's all I had, plus the wood, whatever there was, and then I got more wood from the Biennale, you know, as I needed it, they would come. And I had no food, because I decided that here I am, this is what I'm going to do, and, you know, it's for 10 days or whatever, or a week, let's see what happens. I mean, that's part of the whole thing, to just go out. And so people started coming by, saying hello, you know, like, what are you doing, and and talking, and, you know, and gradually getting into it. And then the radio interviewers appeared, and television then appeared, and, you know, it became an enormous sort of jamboree, in the middle of which was this peculiar and very simple dossing, as it were. And the dossers, who were living up the road, as it were, in the park, would also come along. So, you know, they were quite interested in what was happening. And I remember I was on top of it. I was putting something on the roof. I was standing on the roof doing something. And so they came past and said hello. And I said, and we were having a conversation, you know. And they were saying, you know, oh, that's very interesting. Or, you know, like building a house. And it's not a bit like ours, some sort of rubbish. And one of them suddenly said, oh, have you got, you know, like a dollar or whatever it is? And the other one said, you can't ask that question. Because he's like a symbol for us. You can't ask it. Very funny. I mean, whether it's true or not is another matter. But he actually chastised the other one for asking for money. I mean, I would have given him money, but if I don't remember what I had, I didn't have much, yeah. But I had some. Now, at the same time, while all this was going on, people were saying, well, you know, what food have you got? And I was saying, well, I actually have no food. On the first day, somebody from the Biennale brought me a meal. I think it was an Australian pie, which, I don't know whether the Australians like them, but they're bright yellow anyway. They're pretty awful. Terrible meat. Anyway, I got this Australian pie. But people began to bring food and clothing and books and everything. So that not only did the sort of media sort of latch onto it, but so did, and through the media, and I presume also because people who happened to be walking by, you know, there was a lot of attention paid to it, and it became a massive affair. With me, like a little pea in the middle, And what I found was that I, again, rather like, I actually, it was not necessary for, really for me to do anything. All I had to do was be there. And they came and talked. All these people just wanted to talk, and they just wanted to say things. And it's pretty amazing, really. And I remember there was one extraordinary thing where a little old lady told me her life story. I mean, it was absolutely fascinating. I was thinking, why is she telling me? I mean, I know that old people, quite often, or people who are going to die, want to tell. Yes, they. But I got this whole story anyway, and I got lots of other things as well, and people talking and sort of expressing it. And it was a very calming kind of extremely calm situation with all this activity going on around it.
That could be a key, you know, the desire to become involved.
Yes.
And maybe that is the motivation for actually wanting to talk.
Yes.
Which, in fact, has featured in a lot of the works you've actually done, this dialogue.
Yeah. That's right. Well, an outcome of that talking was the fact that we talked about it amongst a lot of other things, about what was going on, and they said that, well, you know, it was a sort of demonstration of independence, you know, we then talked a lot about, well, here I am in Australia, been here 2 days or whatever, and I have no problems, you know, all my problems are over there, you know, I've in a way suspended living in, you know, the complicated world, as it were, and here I am in this sort of free situation, and you know, it's an idyllic kind of situation, and maybe that calmness and all the rest of it. And they said yes, and here we are, you know, outside in our complicated world, and we think you ought to make your situation a metaphor for our prisons, all of the prisons that we're in, like. One guy was talking about working for 34 years up in a skyscraper and going to the same office and how terrible it was, and he wrote a lot of poems and gave them to me, and but I got a lot of poems in Australia, so I decided that I would in fact accept that, because it was such a common, it was said so often, but I don't know why it was said, I mean I don't think it was in the press or anything, it was just something that people seemed to, so I decided that so I made a structure which it had an outer boundary, then it had another boundary inside that, and then inside that I made a structure that was made up of 9 squares. So if you can think of 9 squares, the middle square is a center point, right? And there are squares all the way around. So that if I was in the middle square, as it were, there would be a that dimension all the way around, separate until we came to the, you know, like a prison, if you like, and then there was another boundary and another boundary. And I decided that I would make it like that, and I spent the time actually doing that, you know, gradually building that up, and it became a very complex sort of structure to get into. People used to visit in the middle of the night. I mean, that was really a bit of a bore, people coming in the middle of the night, you know. I found that a bit aggressive, really. I wanted to go to sleep. People are all there a lot of the time. And on the last day, I fulfilled that by being in the middle of that structure, so that I was then a representation, as I thought, of their situation, as so many of them had described it. And then everything changed, because there had been no aggression at all. It had all been very responsive and so forth. But as soon as and what I did was to sort of, I had a lot like a garden, if you can imagine, the outer fence sort of thing, because it's extremely difficult. You can't have people running in your private, and it's not that you can't, but you have to have a sense of, one has to have a sense of oneself somehow. You have to have your own space, and even in conversation we have that sort of space, and one has to have a sort of living space, whatever it is, however you define it. Even if you walk along the road and sleep under the bridge, you have that sort of, you define your own space. So I defined that by putting these, what were, road things around. And on the last day, I took them down so that everybody could then move right into the structure itself. And also the outer part of the structure, you could move through that. And then you would be facing with the 9 squares. So there would be that all those, that distance all the way around, and I was right in the middle. And then it became aggressive. It was very interesting. I mean, it didn't become, you know, I mean, it wasn't quite as simple as that, and, but it had this sort of aggressive dimension to it, which didn't occur at all before. And I was frightened at that point, because I was right, I couldn't move, I was right in the middle of it. And I felt that, you know, the whole thing had turned over in a way that I hadn't really quite expected. And it was quite frightening. Prior to that, there had been a lot of, because since it was obvious what was happening and the way the structure was going on, and it was all being done through public discussion, I talked with a lot of people about, well, if I do this, how am I going to get out of it? And it was all very simple stuff. And people were saying, well, if you break out of it, you have to be very careful. And this is what they were saying. You must be very careful, because if you break out of it in any violent way, it suggests violent change. Violent change of circumstances is a metaphor for... So you've got to actually... Now, if you can actually get out of this in as quiet a way, in as economic a way as possible, then that actually, in our minds, and from our point of view or my point of view, represents, you know, positive change. I mean, they were making a very definite political statement about the way change should take place.
And they identified the metaphor.
Yes, they were the ones who... So I was thinking, yes, I'll have to think about how the hell am I going to do it, you know. No, anyway, I decided that obviously there's only one way to get out of it, which is as quietly as possible, which I couldn't do because it was so bloody well put together. But I had to force it in the end.
You were caged in, didn't
you? Yeah, yeah. And then breaking out of the thing, you know, which was, you know, was of no, was really nothing, you know. I mean, it had no... I mean, it couldn't be a performance. Those things aren't perform. I mean, it couldn't be a performance in the sense that there is some power in the actions that are made that you know that one can sort of identify with as having real meaning. I mean, to break out of that thing in that way would be to make the thing so banal.
Mm.
It had to be an anti-performance, if you see what I mean. It had to be broken out. It was as though one was actually opening a door.
Yeah.
It could not have possibly have been any. There could be nothing.
Then it would have indicated a kind of melodramatic.
Well, that's the problem. You know that was the. You know, it had as it went to its crescendo. So it had to be conversely flat.
And I suppose. Metaphorically, there's no such thing anyway as breaking out.
That's right.
In that simplistic sense.
In those situations, one is caught with... I mean, or one is... No, I say caught with. Either one accepts the, you know, what the information... Firstly, identifies from one's point of view what one is hearing, and either one accepts it and acts on it or not. I mean... I may have, if I'd been a different person, I may have actually picked up something quite different from all those people, I don't know.
But the piece was very much modified in relation to the response.
Oh, very much so, yes. Yes, yes, I mean, very much. Maybe more so than any other piece of work that I've done.